Good afternoon, your honors. May it please the court, I'm William Finger. I'm appearing on behalf of the appellant, Barbara Kirkmeyer. I know that this court is well familiar with the facts of this case, prior opinions in the Kirkmeyer matter, and I will not go over those with you.
Please.
Our position is relatively straightforward, which is that the decision rendered by this court in Kirkmeyer 2 and 3 set the boundaries of what this court should examine and evaluate, and that the decision in Kirkmeyer 3, cited by the Honorable Judge Webb, is highly germane and pertinent to the outcome of this appeal. In Kirkmeyer 3, at page 19, and slightly before that, the court discussed with it the meaning of a statute, the SES statute. And in interpreting that statute in a way that provided a continuation of employment rights for certified employees, the court stated unanimously, the citizens of the state have recognized and protected an important interest for state employees and have that they have in continuing employment through an enactment of Article 12, Section 13 of the state constitution, citing the nation. The court then importantly stated that interpreting the sentence, the language in the statute, is negating all retention rights would not benefit the state. To the contrary, such an interpretation would limit the pool of employees otherwise qualified for SES positions to those willing to forfeit retention rights if their contracts were not renewed. In so reaching that interpretation, the court made it clear that it would not need to reach the constitutional issues, and that the statute should be interpreted in such a way as that there was no forfeiture of that continuing right of employment. What's happened in this case is that the personnel board has found that my client, Ms. Kirkmeyer, has not voluntarily waived those constitutional rights of continuing employment. She is not estopped, The intent of the parties who were involved in this contract and formulating the form of the contract, the personnel director specifically, intended there to be a right to continue on in employment. And what has happened with the personnel board is they've interpreted the director's provision 211 to mean that there is a forfeiture, that they will forfeit those rights. The decision to continue on employment is solely with the executive director of the department, that there is no protective rights, even though there is a specific finding of fact of no waiver or estoppel. That decision by the board, I believe, cannot stand in light of the principles set out in Kirkmeyer 2 and 3, and that the proper interpretation and the proper understanding of this is that what the executive director, the personnel director, did was he took his powers that had been delegated by him under the state statutes on pay class, had enacted regulations, had enacted protocols, and had the power, because of that delegation, to formulate a form of contract that was acceptable and met with state policy. And he did that. He did that for the express purpose, as stated by Judge Webb, that employees who were good and qualified to continue on with employment if they entered an SES contract. He said that was a permissible choice by executive directors. And my client exercised that choice to have that language in her contract. And the record is clear, the evidentiary findings is clear, is but for that language and that provision, she would not have signed an SES contract. We believe those findings of facts are determinative as to the ultimate question. And what the board did is it improperly interpreted 211, disregarding the director's interpretation. We don't believe, first of all, that the board had the power to interpret 211. We believe the power to interpret 211 rested with the executive director back when he interpreted it and provided for the form of contract. And that if there was going to be a legitimate challenge to that determination, if anyone had standing to challenge, it would have been done in district court, not at the personnel board challenging that. The department clearly didn't have standing. There's nothing in the statute that gives departments rights to challenge K-class studies or determinations. The statute did allow employees at one point to challenge K-class studies. But there is no case that allows anyone else to challenge that type of determination by the personnel director, who is a constitutional entity and who is delegated by the legislature. And there's a clear body of law in this state that once someone is delegated those responsibilities to take care of a pay class and things, all the implied powers go with it. The IDUWU case that we've cited as supplemental authority recently decided by this court, Court of Appeals, also examined the problem with a retroactive taking of a contract or a promise and finds that that is impermissible. This is exactly what happened with my client. There was a promise that was agreed to and ratified at the department level and at the executive department level that now retroactively is being taken. We don't believe you have to reach the constitutional question or the retroactive challenge question, because we believe that the way to decide this case is to hold that the director of personnel had the authority to interpret his own regulation.
Mr. Finger, what if, as I think happened here, a subsequent director disagrees with the earlier director's interpretation of the rule? What are we supposed to do with that?
Well, if the same type of situation could occur in analogous and undoing, he could disagree and make it prospect. If there's a contract based on that interpretation, then that contract is binding, either under contract theories or estoppel theories, because my client changed positions. My client accepted a contract where she believed, and everyone else believed at that time, that she would have a right to return. So if there's going to be a change as a matter of public policy, which can be done, it has to be prospective. Otherwise, you have an estoppel issue and you have a constitutional issue of retroactive taking under the Constitution. And
it's my understanding the constitutional issues are not before us at the moment. Is that right?
I don't necessarily agree. I think constitutional questions have to be looked at in interpreting what occurred. I don't believe you can put the Constitution on the back burner and ignore it. We're not asking you in your decision today to hold that what occurred was unconstitutional. We believe you can avoid constitutional problems by properly interpreting the actions as we have indicated, that disallow retroactive taking as was done in a doing, and by disallowing a de novo review by the board when the standard should have been due deference. There should have been a due deference standard to the personnel director's interpretation, because he is the one that has the authority to interpret his own regulations. Personnel board only has authority to interpret the director's regulations if it's inconsistent with statute, which it isn't because of the holding of this court, or where it violates or is in conflict with a personnel board rule, which the board found it was not, because it examined the waiver provisions. And there was nothing in the board rule, no board rules, where it was found to be violated. In fact, the findings of the personnel board and ALJ was that our position was consistent with personnel board rules.
And you're distinguishing between a director's procedure and a board rule?
Yes. It's substantial. Each are constitutional entities. The director's procedure emanate from his constitutional office and the statutory authority on pay class 24. Five concerning pay class, which she says the personnel director shall establish pay classes as technically and professionally necessary and shall establish procedures and directives required to implement the state's prevailing total compensation philosophy. There is nothing given to the board to get involved in pay class decisions. Thus, the director's procedure 211 is pursuant to that statutory grant and the implied powers given to him. It's not to the board. The board has no authority in the pay class field.
Mr. Finger, did the director decide that the contract with the Safe Harbor Clause was consistent with the rule, or did he create an exception to the rule?
He found it, his testimony, which was produced through deposition, was he found it consistent with the Constitution and the rules he promulgated. And he did it to ensure the continuation of qualified individuals in employment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other time I have, I'll reserve.
Good afternoon. May it please the court.
You can run the podium down if you wish.
May it please the court. My name is Molly Allen Motes, Assistant Attorney General, and I'm here on behalf of the Department of Local Affairs. Mr. Finger is correct that this court provided a very specific remand order to the State Personnel Board to address specific issues and in what order those issues were addressed. This court entrusted the board as the state constitutional entity with expertise in personnel matters to address these issues, and the board did so accordingly. Mr. Finger now claims on appeal, long after the remand order was issued, that the State Personnel Board never had jurisdiction to interpret Director's Procedure 211, because that jurisdiction was only within the State Personnel Director. This argument is unfounded. The State Personnel's duty to administer the personnel system is not absolute. There is no case law to indicate or statute or constitutional provision that indicates that the State Personnel Director is solely responsible for interpreting his procedures. In fact, under the Constitution, Article 12, Section 14, Parts 3 and 4, the State Personnel Board is responsible for promulgating rules that govern the personnel system, and the State Personnel Director is responsible for administering the system in compliance with the Constitution, laws, and rules enacted by the board.
But is there a difference between a board-enacted rule, which does not seem to exist as germane to the Safe Harbor Clause, and the director's procedures that he promulgates on his own, independent of the board?
Your Honor, I would submit that there is not a difference, and that is because a close look at the State Personnel System Act embodied at 2450.101 indicates that the purpose of the personnel system is to establish a uniform and comprehensive personnel management system of personnel management. Under the then applicable Board Rule 11, it stated the same thing, and the board rules and director's procedures were collectively referred to as rules.
Where are the director's procedures treated as rules?
Under Board Rule 11 in the preamble to the board rules that were in existence and the director's procedures that were in existence in 2007, you will note that they are collectively referred to as rules, and that's specific under Board Rule 11.
And you make no distinction between a rule promulgated by the board and a procedure promulgated by the director?
No, I think that they're meant to act together as part of the uniform comprehensive system. Mm-hmm. And I think that given that the Constitution mandated that the actions of the director be consistent with the laws and rules enacted by the board, and that's led to the Supreme Court's finding in Swan versus Department of Personnel, the State Personnel Board is responsible for reviewing the actions of the head of the personnel department or the State Personnel Director. And that includes interpretations of procedures. Mr. Finger argued today that the director's right to interpret Director's Procedure 211 also stemmed from the pay plan statute. The fact that the Safe Harbor Clause was part of the Senior Executive Service contract and the Senior Executive Service was part of the pay plan statute does not change this analysis. Under the pay plan statute, which is embodied at CRS 2450-104, the director, it states that the director shall establish procedures necessary to implement the state's total prevailing compensation philosophy. It also states that the director's review and determination of total compensation practices is not subject to appeal. Total compensation practices under that statute were defined as salary, group benefits, retirement benefits, premium pay, and performance incentives. The Safe Harbor Clause, an optional contract provision provided to a select number of classified employees that dealt with what would occur to an SES employee at the end of their SES contract, was not a total compensation practice within the sole discretion of the director. Further and significantly, Your Honors, I would submit that under 2450-104-5C, that specifically, which was the pay plan statute, and specifically dealt with the SES, it delineated the responsibilities of the director. Under that provision, it states that the director shall be responsible for establishing criteria for inclusion in the SES, and that the director shall be responsible for reviewing nominations for the SES. But the provision goes on to state that the appointing authority shall maintain responsibility for management of the SES employee. And so that statutory provision that's specific to SES goes to show that the director's administration of SES was not absolute. And I would also submit that in this case, Your Honors, this case was initially filed at the State Personnel Board by Ms. Kirkmeyer as she basically appealed the decision of an appointing authority to separate her from state service. The decision of an appointing authority with respect to pay, status, or tenure is within the jurisdiction of the board. For the board to evaluate whether the decision of the appointing authority could be upheld, it had to determine whether the Safe Harbor Clause, which prevented Ms. Kirkmeyer from, which prevented separation of an employee from SES, could be upheld under board rules and director's procedures. I submit that the board retained proper jurisdiction in this case and in addressing the issue of whether the Safe Harbor Clause was enforceable under Director's Procedure 211.
What about the question of deferring to the Director Wells' expressed or implied interpretation of DP 211 rather than the board making a de novo interpretation, assuming that the board had jurisdiction to do so?
Your Honor, I don't think that Director Wells' informal interpretation of Director's Procedure 211 was entitled to a presumption of validity. The cases that Mr. Finger relies on in his briefing in this case are Bernstein versus Livingston and Anderson versus Department of Personnel. Those cases involved review of the director's decision regarding salary survey methodologies. And those cases were decided in the 1980s. And in those cases, the court held that under the then existing pay plan statute, the board's decisions regarding salary survey methodologies could not be overturned unless arbitrary, capricious, or contrary to rule of law. By 2007, the pay plan statute no longer included that language. It is true, Your Honors, that under the State Administrative Procedures Act, the final decision of a agency is entitled or cannot be overturned unless arbitrary, capricious, or contrary to rule of law. But the Safe Harbor Clause was, again, an optional contract provision provided to a select group of classified employees. It was not a final administrative ruling or final decision in any way. And I would also submit that interpretation of Director's Procedure 211 was not necessary. Director's Procedure 211 is unambiguous. It states under 211C, the second sentence, that if the department head does, or timely non-renews an SES contract, the department head shall either separate the SES, or shall either separate the employee from state service, or appoint the employee to a vacant position in the classified system for which they are qualified. Director's Procedure 211D states that if the SES contract is not timely non-renewed, and the SES and the employee's SES contract is not in fact renewed by July 1st, then the employees shall be removed from the senior executive service and returned to the traditional pay plan. Director's Procedure 211C&D were unambiguous. The doctrine of constitutional avoidance is not implicated in this case. Under that doctrine, which is briefed in Hernandez versus Carlson, the 10th Circuit case, which both Mr. Finger and I filed supplemental briefs about, so the doctrine of constitutional avoidance is invoked if a statute or rule which an agency administers is ambiguous, then the agency's interpretation must be constitutional. Director's Procedure 211 was not ambiguous. It was clear as to what was to occur to a classified employee. It was also clear as to when a classified employee could be guaranteed a vacant, or could not be guaranteed, I'm sorry, but could be placed in a vacant position in the classified system. In the absence of any ambiguities or needs to or need to fill gaps in the regulation, there was no need to interpret Director's Procedure 211 on the part of the director. Here, the board did interpret Director's Procedure 211 in accordance with the only one plausible interpretation based on its plain meaning, and that interpretation should be upheld because the Safe Harbor Clause directly contravenes that by removing the time requirement, or timely notice of non-renewal requirements and the discretion of the appointing authority. If I can just take one moment, please. To the extent that Ms. Kirkmeyer believes that Director's Procedure 211C&D, or in its entirety, is not valid for a constitutional reason, that was specifically reserved for the district court by virtue of this court's remand order. But I believe that the court's interpretation of 211 was proper given its plain language. As to Mr. Finger's assertion that the State Personnel Board found that the State Personnel Board's finding that the Safe Harbor Clause is not enforceable under Director's Procedure 211, and that finding is inconsistent with the board's finding that she did not waive a right, I would submit, Your Honor, that the ALJ, in his final decision in this case, never stated that Ms. Kirkmeyer never made a finding as to constitutional rights. He found that Ms. Kirkmeyer did not waive her intended right to be placed in a vacant position in the classified system. But he found that placement in the vacant position in the classified system would be based on, obviously, the timely notice of non-renewal and the discretion of the appointing authority. I believe that the order of the board should be affirmed and that the relief requested by Ms. Kirkmeyer should be denied.
Did you agree that if we were so to hold, then Ms. Kirkmeyer would be free to seek a lifting of the stay in the district court, and there she could present her argument that her alleged constitutional interests prevail over our interpretation and everybody else's interpretation of DP 2-11?
I think that would be consistent, yes, that she would be able to lift that stay as consistent with this court's remand order.
And it would be free to litigate her constitutional claims, whatever merit or lack of merit there may be in.
Correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, members of the court. The director's procedure that was in effect in 2006 was enacted in 2009, separate and apart from the State Personnel Board rules. The enactment of the director's procedure was on May 5, 2005, effective July 1. The Personnel Board enactment was April 19, 2005. Thus, separate administrative procedures occurred that distinguished between the Personnel Board rules and the directors. They are to be harmonized where possible, and that's exactly what the law says. If there's any inconsistency between the procedures and the directives, the board can then enter into it. But there is no inconsistency that has been pointed out in argument or in the opinion of the ALJ. Now, there is ambiguity in 211. And the ambiguity in 211 comes from the two parts, one of which is the process of negotiation and waiver, where the administrative law judge said the language concerning that is that the employee may waive, not it shall waive. So if the employee may waive, and that's required to be in writing and expressed and knowing, if the employee does not waive that right to continue their employment and continue on, there is inconsistency with then the second provision, which says the director shall separate. The inconsistency, the way it has to be consistent, is that the waivers which are expressed and knowing, and also covered that, and that's covered in the director's procedure order that was in effect, that has to be consistent with that separation or the continuation. Thus, if the employee does not waive under the contract, the constitutional right or the right to return, then the director who has negotiated, or the agency that's negotiated that contract, is obligated to return to an unoccupied position. That's the way it becomes consistent. Otherwise, it's completely inconsistent where you don't waive your constitutional right and contract right, and you are separated. It cannot be consistent under that provision. And that's the argument we made to the ALJ, that you have to have that form of consistency for this to be interpreted. Yes, the personnel, executive director can do either one A or B, but at the time of contracting, the executive director in the department has given up the option of one of those.
By not exacting a waiver from the employee.
By not obtaining the waiver. And the employee has a right to say, I'm not going to waive, as you have said in your opinion. And if the employee says, I'm not going to waive, and he's continued on in employment, then they're protected. And it's as simple as that. Have the employee sign a knowing and intentional waiver of giving up rights in the contract. Make that mandatory. Then the employee is on notice what will happen. The agency is on notice what will happen. And you can make that election. If you don't get that waiver, if that right is of continuation is reserved as a constitutional right or some other property right or contract right, then you have to take the option, the other option, which has not been waived, which is the continuation in a vacant position.
I think your time is exhausted.
Thank you very much for your attention.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. We will issue written opinion in due course.